Hi, this is Todd. The radio station automation system did not capture the closing market report for Thursday afternoon in its completion. I have parts of it that are pre-produced, so I put together a program for you that includes the morning interview I did with Dan Zwicker, really worth listening to. There's also a piece with the Secretary of Agriculture, and of course, the bit on El Nino, if you happen to listen live and wanted to come back, with Mike Tenore at the end. So please do listen to the program again. I extend you my apologies.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 10th day of September 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting and Channel Siege from Windsor, Illinois, will help us look at the cash grain market, and we'll hear all about the weather forecast, that with Mike Tenore of T-Storm, more on the El Nino, and along the way, we'll hear from the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack. He was on the University of Illinois campus today to talk about $100 million in blender pumps. Actually, $200 million in blender pumps. Stay with us for this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. This is WILL AM 580. I'm out of the office at the moment, so I don't have an update for you of the numbers from the CME group in Chicago. Fortunately, Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, was available early this morning so that I can be at this time, at this moment, on the biofuels energy farm that's just south of campus here in Urbana-Champaign with the Secretary of Agriculture. I'm sure we'll have more on that later in the day. He's here on campus all day long. We'll talk more about that during the closing market report, but suffice it to say, I'm on command performance, relatively speaking, checking out what the announcement might be from the Secretary of Agriculture related to biofuels in some form this morning. And then, of course, he'll be speaking at 12:30 in the Alice Campbell Hall. That's the Alumni Center, not the Campbell Hall, which is the home to the radio station. Those are two different buildings right here on campus. That's at 12:30 today. The Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, is visiting the U of I campus. Dan Zwicker is here. Thanks, Dan, for being with me a little bit early. I know you're retired, relatively speaking, but still really busy. I suppose you kind of gave up that 6 a.m. thing, and fortunately, it's only 10 after 8, but I suspect you get up a lot later these days than you used to.
Well, I've given up getting up at that 5 and 6 o'clock in the morning stuff, at least for the time being anyway. No, more than happy here to join you here this morning at 8 o'clock. Beautiful day down here in Waco, Texas. We're finally getting a break from the heat. We've had a steady diet of mid to upper 90s. Temperatures, and we're finally breaking down a little bit. I hope that is a sign that maybe fall is finally here. But other than that, real happy to be with you here this morning.
Well, the big things that we're looking forward to are the crop production and the WASDE figures that will be released by USDA tomorrow. That'll happen at 11 a.m. in the morning. For those listeners that want those numbers as quickly as possible, you can check out our website at willag.org sometime later today. Yet I'll post my own Twitter account there probably before I head out this morning, because I'll try to keep you up to date on what the Secretary of Agriculture is doing as it happens this morning. So you might check it out right now, actually. At this point, he may or may not have made the announcement. He's scheduled to start at 9:30, or was scheduled to start at 9:30. So check out this morning, and then tomorrow morning, the willag.org. My Twitter account will be posted there, and you can find some updates on both the Secretary's movements on Thursday, and then, of course, the reports tomorrow. Those numbers, you think, will change very much in the September report, Dan?
Well, it's difficult to see how the needle would move a whole bunch. I think there's maybe reason to believe that the ear weights and whatnot that they've done this time around might bring the numbers down a shade. I think the trade's kind of thinking that maybe we might come down a little bit, but I don't think or at least right now, I don't expect them to move the needle very much. I think the October report is where the needle is going to move. They're going to have much more data at that point in time. And then they will take a look at all the FSA reported acres numbers and then maybe make some acreage adjustments. So I think the October report is still going to be the one to watch. But I am hearing, though, I mean, as the yields I'm hearing in Illinois, and I know it's early, there's not a lot been done, but what's been done, the yields are all coming in at 14 to 15% below last year's level, and even more. I'm even starting to hear some yields in the prime areas of East Central Illinois that are coming in very disappointing compared to expectations. But you know, if you take a 15% reduction from last year, and last year I think we had a 200 bushel average here in Illinois.
We did.
Well, that kind of puts you where USDA has us at that 170 level. So that seems to be, but like I said, it's early. We haven't had that much harvest, but if you just use that as a guideline, that 170 is kind of where Illinois is looking, at least at the moment. And that's kind of, I think, what Pro Farmer ended up with, somewhere in that 170 range. So maybe 170 is going to catch Illinois. But I do think that the good areas are not as good as what everybody was thinking, at least from what I'm hearing. So there's probably room for some downward adjustments in maybe some of the states that have the higher yields. That, of course, then would bring down the overall national average yield.
Yeah, so just as a reminder, USDA's crop production report is due out tomorrow. They have the national yield for corn now at 168.8. That's as of the August figures, updated again tomorrow. The total production from USDA in August was 13.686 billion bushels. As a reminder, last year we raised 14.216 billion bushels of corn. The soybean number at this point is 3.916 billion bushel crop, and USDA set at 46.9. The average trade guess is slightly lower. It's at 46.4. Where do you think that number will come in?
Well, it's hard to say. I haven't heard anything. There's been some early two beans harvested, but some I haven't really heard that much. I think you could probably argue that the last couple of weeks of the growing season, a lot of the area was dry and hot, and that may not have boiled well for the beans making that extra 2 or 3 bushels that would maybe have the national average yield that high. I don't know if USDA's got how much more data they got on this report than they did the previous report to actually move the needle. As soon as I say this, USDA will, throw us a curveball tomorrow morning. I think, like I said, I think most in the trade are going to brace for October because there's a lot of people still believe that USDA is overstating the planted soybean acreage number, a million acres or more. So they do think that our overall production is going to be smaller than that because we just don't have the acres, at least the initial blush on the FSA numbers that we saw there in August. We're going to take another look, and I'm not too sure USDA doesn't get an early peek at those. I don't know if they're allowed, how confidential those numbers really are. They might have a little early peak and they might make some acreage adjustments on this September report, but usually major acreage adjustments are reserved for the October report.
Is there anything on the charts that concerns you at this point? For instance, in the corn, we're still inside the range on the weekly chart from the last report. Is there a concern there that we might break to the downside tomorrow?
Well, yeah, there is. I mean, we just haven't really traced out what I would call any kind of a bottom. I think the beans are the ones that are scary. If you would take the sideways action that we've seen in November soybeans, basically since the crop report, I mean, since we made this low here, I guess the late August low of 855, we've been kind of in a 875 to 890 range now for about 3 weeks. If you don't start breaking to the upside on that, you're going to break to the downside. And if you break to the downside, then you a lot of technicians will say, okay, 875 is the midpoint of a move lower measured off of the high that we had prior to the August crop report, which would be around $10. So that would be $1.25. So you subtract $1.25 from 875, and that puts you in the 750 range, I think.
Yeah, plus another dime. The high was 10.20, so you're down at 740, I guess. That's a pretty steep drop.
That's a pretty good drop. And, of course, I've sent you the chart, and a lot of people that listened to me last winter, they saw the corn-soybean ratio. I mean, it has a pretty consistent cycle in that it moves from 3-to-1 to 2-to-1 every 5 years or so, and we're now in the mood to take soybeans and corn down to the 2-to-1 or less. And, you know, if corn is going to hold in this 350 area, and you start multiplying corn by 2, 350, there's $7 or 375, there's your 750. So that is what scares me the most. And the thing that we got to keep in mind is nobody really talks about it, but in all practical purposes, we're in a trade war, and we're in a trade war via devaluation of currencies. We don't have tariffs and we don't have this and that, but when countries continue to devalue their currency against the dollar, that puts us basically at a disadvantage in the export market, and the higher prices that we experience here between 07 and 12 did stimulate world production of corn, soybeans, and wheat around the world, just like it did here in the United States. And we're just basically hanging out. It will be interesting to see what kind of export numbers we do get tomorrow. If soybeans does seem to be a little active, we're getting some, daily sale announcements on soybeans, but corn is really dead in the water. And you've mentioned it several times. I think both Daryl and Scott have mentioned that the pace, this year's pace of export sales to corn, are just well behind the five-year average and well behind any kind of number that we could obtain, at least at this point, if something changes in a big hurry. And that's going to be the problem with corn. Ethanol, we can only grind so much. And I even understand now that a lot of gas stations may even start dropping E85 because gasoline is so much cheaper than ethanol that they're not even going to bother using a pump with E85. But the gas stations have never really promoted E85. And they tell me that the oil companies pretty well threatened the convenience stores or the gas stations that they didn't really want E85 competitively priced. They always wanted it high enough that nobody would actually use it anyway. So I don't think they've been playing fair with us on that. But E85 sales have just never really taken off, and that's what we got to have for the ethanol producers to produce more ethanol and use it that way. But so I'm a little worried now. The livestock numbers are up. but we got a lot of substitute, low-quality wheats and that kind of stuff. But I am a little concerned with this currency devaluation that's going on around the world. And then I'm a little concerned with actually the equity situation. We still have those outside downdrafting forces. I personally believe the U.S. stock market is a real big bubble because there was no other place for investors to put their money except to buy stock and hope that the stock goes up in value. So there's room for that to come squashing down on us. And I don't know what the Fed's going to do on interest rates. Some feel that if they would raise interest rates, that would maybe kickstart a lot of new building activity because people's not building as long as interest rates are at these levels. If interest rates were going to start rising, we might be able to kickstart the economy and start seeing more building of manufacturing and homes and whatnot, and maybe help the economy out that way. But we've got a lot of problems economically, as you well know, in Illinois. What's going on in Illinois? We had the same problem in Washington, and whether or not we were going to raise the debt ceiling and whether or not we're going to get a budget in Illinois. So there's going to be a lot of turbulence, I think, that could spill on over into the commodity markets.
Dan, thanks so much. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again this afternoon.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting. He is in Waco, Texas. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture held nothing back on the University of Illinois campus this morning when he talked about biofuels and blender pumps for 21 states. The Secretary of Ag came to the U of I campus to talk really about two things, the importance of agricultural research and blender pumps. However, he started his press conference with a shot over the bow of the oil industry. He thinks it is fearful of competition from farmers. Competition that Tom Vilsack says is making gasoline more affordable.
The reason why the oil industry is coming up with these preposterous claims is because they understand the power of the biofuel industry. They understand that today it's helping to employ and support, according to one study, over 800,000 jobs. They know that it is reducing the cost of gasoline to consumers by about $2.50 for every barrel of oil that's utilized in gas production. They know that it's better for the environment, reducing emissions, and they know that it helps to stabilize farm income and to create job opportunities in rural places. And it reflects a significant competitor to an oil-based and petroleum-based economy. They also know this industry is now expanding beyond just fuel and energy production to chemicals and other materials. The bio-based industry is now a $369 billion industry that helps to employ 4 million people, and it certainly plays to the strengths of the Midwest. What's happening here is the future, growing additional feedstocks that will allow us to diversify beyond corn-based ethanol to include a variety of other advanced biofuels. The key is for us to continue to encourage market opportunities for biofuels. Today, we're announcing a partnership with 21 states, including the state of Illinois, in which we will use $100 million of federal funding to be leveraged with another $100 million from our partners to help expand access to higher blends of ethanol around the country. 21 states will be engaged and involved in expanding and providing assistance to petroleum marketers and to convenience store operators to expand the number of pumping systems that will allow for E15, E85, and higher blends of ethanol. We anticipate and expect with this additional resource that we will see nearly 5,000 additional systems installed, which will more than double the current number and obviously lead to more utilization of biofuel. This is the right way to approach diversifying and balancing out our energy portfolio. It's the right way to help support not just Midwestern farmers, but farmers all over the United States. It's the right way to make sure consumers have choice and less expensive gas, and it's the right thing for the environment. This is one of many steps that the USDA is taking to help this industry. We've invested over $320 million in research along the lines of what you see here at the University of Illinois. We provide assistance and help to 850 producers to help produce the miscanthus that you see here, camelina, and other possible alternatives for corn-based ethanol. They provide and support for 48,000 acres of these kinds of crops, which are in turn are helping 36 facilities produce new energy and fuel. We've worked with over 300 advanced biofuel companies, providing nearly $285 million of assistance and help. We've helped to finance 9 new biorefineries that are taking everything from municipal waste to perennial grasses like we see here in producing fuel and energy. And we have also invested significantly in developing a series of tools for producers to understand precisely what the feedstock requirements are in 5 biofuel centers, research centers that operate throughout the U.S. This is an aggressive effort on our part. We're going to continue to be supportive of this industry. And today is another step forward for the industry. And I think we'll continue to provide better balance and better service and better options and less expensive fuel costs for American consumers.
USDA wants to double the number of blender pumps available. The secretary expects an additional 5,000 pumps and systems to be installed. Consumers will need to be aware of the pumps and how they work, but Paul Jeske, an Illinois corn grower from Mazan, says it shouldn't really cause any problems.
Well, these blender pumps that are going to be installed with this grant money will have the capabilities of pumping higher blends. Right now, a lot of the pumps can only pump E10. So these pumps would make available higher blends. It would depend what the market demand was in that particular area. But certainly E15 will be offered. And other blends, that particular retailer may be able to offer E30, E50, and of course E85. And all those higher blends then would only be used in flex fuel vehicles.
How do consumers need to be careful? Because I don't believe all cars, maybe half the cars on the road, will be able to accept an E15 and above blend.
As a general statement, cars made after 2001 can probably burn E15 all right, but they should consult their owner's manual and also the local dealer that they do their maintenance with. It'd be good to ask them. But EPA has determined that most cars built after 2001 can burn at least E15 with no major problems, in their opinion.
Higher blends, you need to make sure it says flex fuel on your vehicle.
Definitely. Anything above an E15, yes. Typically, it's the yellow insignia either on the gas cap or around the point of entry of gasoline. And it should say flex fuel on there. So anything above E15, so an E20, E30, E50, you need to have a flex fuel vehicle.
The rollout of the new blender pumps and systems will take some time. Consumers can expect to see the build-out begin within the next year. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. I'll post my Twitter account there. Don't forget to go at 11 o'clock Central Time tomorrow morning to find the latest details on the crop production and WASDE reports from USDA. You're listening to the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, I'm told the government released an update of its evaluation of El Nino today. Can you give me some details?
Well, the big story from the El Nino report regards just how strong the El Nino is expected to become. Now, keep in mind that when we talk about an El Nino, all we really are talking about is the temperature of the ocean in the middle of the Pacific Ocean around the equator. This is a very large area of water. It's bigger than the United States. And this area of water has its own weather pattern, and we see that through the ocean temperature out there in the middle of the Pacific. So when we see an El Nino, and when we see a strong El Nino, it simply means that water temperatures across the Pacific Ocean are much warmer than normal. We have a number of climate models that can project several months into the future, and they're all pointing to the continued development of the El Nino that we have in place now, and that it should turn strong by the time we get into December or January. When we talk about a strong El Nino, we don't have very many cases of this in the past. We started keeping detailed records in 1950, And there's only been three strong El Niños in that time. One was in the winter of 1982-83, and also in the winter of 97-98. Many people might remember the Saturday Night Live skit where Chris Farley did the El Nino Boy impression. That was in the winter of 1997-98. So El Nino Boy, in some form or another, is coming back. We can see the temperatures across the ocean are already at the level of the 1997-98 event. And the only real question is, will we warm all the way to that level or will we surpass it? No matter how you look at it, an El Nino will drive the worldwide weather pattern over the next 3 to 6 months.
So which parts of the United States and other parts of the world will be most impacted and in what ways?
Well, one of the few times we'll ever be able to say this is that we do have a pretty solid outlook on what we expect this winter. If you look at the 1982-83 and 1997-98 event across the Corn Belt, they were much warmer than normal across the Midwest. So we have pretty high confidence that we'll see a warmer than normal winter coming up, and that encompasses December, January, and February. Rain and snow are mixed. Some were a little dry, some were a little wet, not only in those events, but in some moderately strong events. So that's kind of what we expect for the Corn Belt. As you move to the south, it's usually much wetter and cooler than normal. We saw those types of weather patterns also in those same events. That includes California, where it's pretty probable for the drought to come to a fairly dramatic end later on this year and early into next year. Beyond that, probably the most notable feature regards weather later next summer. There's a real high probability, at least just based on historical data, for next August to end up much warmer than normal across the Midwest. We looked at corn and soybean yields in some of the similar years to what we have now and what we expect to happen next year regarding the El Nino, and yields were mixed.
That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.